Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Shackle, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rented sector. In this episode, I'm joined by Darren from LPG. At the Lettings Hub, we're very passionate about protecting our letting agents and their landlords from all the risks of renting a property. And one of the biggest risks that we know landlords face is not receiving the rent on time. LPG are our insurers for all of our insurance products that we've worked with now for many years. Hopefully, the landlord has engaged in a quality letting agent who ensures they don't have extended void periods between tenants. And so it is the risk of tenants being unwilling or unable to pay their rent that really is the greatest risk. This can prove catastrophic for a landlord, and that's where rent and legal protection can really help. So Darren, welcome to you. Please introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit more about LPG and your role there.
Thank you, Heidi, and hello, listeners. I'm the Director of Partnerships at LPG, and I have been now for almost 4 years. LPG was only set up about 7 years ago, and it was set up by a small team of people who had vast amounts of experience in the rent protection and legal expenses market. By listening to prospective clients about what they thought was wrong with the rent and legal protection products, we gained a greater understanding of what we needed to do differently. Some of that was down to developing changes in cover, better cover. Some of that was about price, but not all of it was to do with that. Mostly it was to do with how claims are handled. So one of the big assets of LPG was we developed a claims model which relied on a strong supply chain by working with first-class solicitors, but also making sure that things are done quickly. So we've seen in the past that insurance companies can be very slow at making decisions and certainly very slow at making payments. And that was one of the first things that we wanted to address when we came into this market.
So thank you, Darren, and a big welcome to you. And thank you for obviously bringing along all your expertise today, which I'm sure we're going to benefit from. So to get started, let's just start at the basics and remind our listeners exactly what a rent and legal protection policy is. What are the key advantages for landlords when it comes to protecting their rent? And actually, it's not just a policy that protects rent. It actually covers any breach of tenancy. And why a letting agent definitely would benefit from considering it as part of their service to offer to landlords.
Yes, well, in a nutshell, the main purpose of a rent and legal protection policy is to give a landlord the peace of mind that they will get their rent payments, even if things change with the tenant or circumstances of the tenant change. And we appreciate whilst every effort is made at the start of a tenancy to ensure that that tenant is the best one available and all the references verify that, is normally sometime down the lifespan of a tenancy that problems occur. A great majority of our claims come from tenants losing their job or even unfortunate circumstances like separation and divorce. And none of these can be foreseen as part of a reference, but they happen, and they happen far too often in terms of the claims that we see. Every letting agent, in my mind, should be making their landlords aware of this product. And we know from many examples, landlords love their agent even more when an RLP policy sorts out a problem for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose in terms of the policy, not only does it pay the rent, it pays all of the legal fees to get possession of the property. It pays all of the bailiff and court fees to obviously get that property back, and even actually pays after vacant possession has been obtained, even sometimes additional rent payments if that property has been damaged and therefore can't be relet. What I suppose are some of the real kind of nitty gritty bits of the policy that are worth mentioning? Because I suppose like anything on the market, there's the high end, the middle and the bad, and it kind of comes down to the small print maybe.
Yeah, you're quite right, Heidi. I think the headline for the policy is that it will pay the rent. And that is probably one of the most important things that both the agent and the landlord are focused on. But some of the hidden benefits or related benefits are things like the legal costs. With evictions taking as long as 8+ months now to go through the court system, legal costs can quite easily rack up. And the longer it goes on, the more expensive it costs. And it would be quite reasonable for a landlord to expect to pay over £3,000 in legal fees to get their property back. These are some of the hidden benefits of the policy.
I suppose some of the pitfalls of other policies on the market is actually looking at how long they actually pay out for. With court delays as they are, not every policy pays out for 12 months or they only pay out for 12 months and not to actually the properties then. I know we've definitely seen some claims that have run on way past the year point due to defended claims by the tenant or court delays or even bailiffs, because that's kind of a whole other thing which I'm sure we'll talk about. Or even just making sure the policy doesn't run out at the end of the renewal point. The devil's very much in the detail. And I think one of the things that some of our customers say to us, and we see a massive disparity. We have some customers that are on more than an 80% opt-in and sales rate for a rent and legal protection policy, which means for the policies that they manage, they have more than 80% with a rent and legal protection policy on them. We have some customers with none at all, and we have a whole wide range of people kind of in the middle on the conversion levels. And one of the things that agents say to us sometimes is, the problem is I rave about your referencing to my landlord. You know, I say the landlord, we're doing the best referencing and we've picked the highest quality tenant. So I find it really awkward then to say, I really think you need a rent and legal protection policy, because it's near enough like, we've done a good job, but it might not be good enough, and therefore you need to buy it. And they struggle with that kind of conversation. But I agree with you. I actually think it's near enough bordering on kind of negligent of an agent not to actually mention it to a landlord, to make them aware that it's there and for the price that it is available. Whether the landlord chooses to take it or not, you know, they can kind of decide what their risk appetite is, I suppose, and also what their own personal financial situation is that sits behind, you know, and what they know as to whether they could afford the rent if it goes wrong. They know whether they have a mortgage, they know what's going on with their personal mortgage interest rates, etc. But tell us, Darren, really, I suppose we hardly see any claims, do we, at the very, very beginning of a tenancy? It's not like a tenant moves in and at that point goes totally rogue. That happens in very, very, very kind of extreme circumstance. What typically happens? When does a claim happen? Why does a claim happen?
You're quite right, Heidi. Very few of the claims that we see come within the first few weeks, months, or even year of a tenancy. It tends to be those established tenancies where the tenant, one of them's lost their job, or they break up, or we've had situations where a child comes along and the income in the household drops and they can't afford the rent any longer. And these can happen well into a tenancy, certainly after the first year, more often than not. But sometimes we've seen them when the tenants have been in there 12 years and they've had a problem and the tenant doesn't want to leave the property. And in some cases, the landlord doesn't even want the tenant to leave the property because they've had such a good experience with them for so many years. And it's just that unfortunate set of circumstances where they've lost their job. And we saw a lot of that during the pandemic when lots of people were put on furlough and lots of people lost their jobs. And at the time, it was an unusual set of circumstances. And that was partly when we developed the mediation service that we have within our claim service, which allowed us and our legal firms that we work with to bring the tenant and the landlord together to say, look, let's understand what the problems are. Let's understand what could happen if things aren't resolved. And things like payment plans were put in place during the pandemic to help cover that sort of time when nobody knew what was really happening. But we still do that today. The pandemic is history and a distant memory for some. But even today, people lose their jobs, they're looking for another job. And in that interim period, the landlords are quite often sort of help working with us and our legal representatives to sort of come up to a sort of solution to move forward with. But that only happens in a certain number of cases. All too often, the landlord and the tenant can't come to a conclusion. And the tenant, certainly when it's a breakdown relationship, they're never going to get themselves back onto an even keel where they can afford to carry on paying the rent in the same way, which is when the policy needs to come along and deal with the unfortunate situation of going through an eviction process.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, you know, there's a lot of changes that have happened even post pandemic where we've seen cost of living play a part and rents rising and increased interest rates for landlords, subletting becoming more of a common occurrence. And we'll talk about some of those things. Internally, within the Lettings Hub, we very much pride ourselves and discuss that quality referencing is essentially like the underwriting criteria, I suppose, for a rent and legal protection policy, and the fact that we absolutely want to recommend the right tenants, to the agent and try and put the right people into the properties in the beginning. We even offer a fraud guarantee as an example on that basis. But if we've got such high quality referencing, or, you know, and that's kind of where we're, you know, one of the things that we talk about as a business, does it lessen the need for an RLP policy? Because that's one of the things that the agents say is, if I'm talking to my landlords about, you know, that we do such a thorough job in selecting the tenant, not just in terms of what we do, but they've obviously met them in person and they've spoken to them and they understand their circumstances. And with so much demand on a property, they're trying to pick the very best. Why is it so important that an RLP policy is still considered or purchased for the landlord?
Heidi, you're quite right. The quality of the reference is probably one of the most important things from an insurer point of view in making sure that good tenants go into a property, and it is therefore sort of perceived by the agent and maybe the landlord that they don't need RLP. But what we see is that over 90% of the claims that we receive and handle don't happen in the first year. Well, they tend to happen quite well down the road of the lifespan of the tenancy. And they come from situations that no one's ever going to foresee. I've already mentioned before that people lose their jobs, people split up, there's divorces. These are the kind of things that none of us can predict in our own relationships, let alone in the relationship with the tenants and the landlords. So it's that unknown that landlords should be aware of. It's that unknown risk that letting agents should be making their landlords aware of, that for a relatively small price, they're protecting their probably one of their biggest financial investments. If it's not their main home, it's their rented properties that are major financial investments for them. And if they've got a mortgage on the property, will they have enough in savings to cover the period of time that a tenant can't or won't pay their rent?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because I'm going to say in the olden days, but we used to say that a landlord should have 3 months worth of rent in the bank at any time if a situation goes wrong. And that was to help pay for some legal fees and also about 2 months rent, which is typically what it would have taken to have the conversation with the tenant, go to court, get possession, and then obviously use up any deposit, I suppose, that was held. That's a very different situation now with, you know, the average court times. If you actually look on the government website, they're now quoting up to 12 months. In reality, from an insurance point of view, when we kind of act and support, we're talking around 8. And that's simply because we've got, you know, I suppose, the highest quality legal teams that act really quickly. Mediation does work in some situations. And then obviously we are, I guess, clever in court to help get possession as fast as we can and instruct every step of the way fast. But even 8 months is such a long period of time. And if the average rent now in the UK is just up over £1,200, doing the maths, with the legal fees on top, which I think, you know, go up to about £3,000 now, Darren, is that right?
That's right, yeah. On average, it could be as much as £3,000 to go through the full process.
Yeah, that, you know, add it all together, it's definitely a risk. And I think if we go to some of the changes that have happened, you know, the main ones being mortgage rates have risen. So where landlords may have had smaller mortgage payments, but were, you know, benefiting from higher rent payments, that gap is closing. And although rents have risen, not necessarily at the rate that the mortgage rates have risen, it puts definite pressure on the landlord. So that's one thing where we can see landlords become more desperate to receive the claim money early in that process, to your point earlier. We obviously then see rents rising and tenants staying longer. So what a tenant could afford previously to what they can eventually afford at the point where something goes wrong, we know their disposable income is shrinking all the time, because energy bills have gone up, food bills have gone up, you know, petrol has gone up, and income hasn't risen. So actually there's a lot of pressure. And if something goes wrong, whether that be they're sick and off work and work don't pay sick pay for physical or mental health reasons, or their car breaks down and they've suddenly got, you know, a £300 bill, whereas rent was one of the primary payments that was made because it kept a roof over their head, usually after mobile phone, actually, that was usually the first priority. But now it's such a big bill that if they genuinely can't make it, sometimes the communication kind of spirals down and they can't do it. But the other thing that we're seeing more commonly is subletting. And obviously, again, due to cost of living, people either, you know, totally fraudulently letting other people live in the house, which poses a big problem to the agent or the landlord in the fact that they've now got somebody in the house where they have no tenancy agreement. And therefore, you know, it makes the legal process more challenging. Or that the fact that the tenant is in the property, but with other people too, and in some instances is making more money than the landlord in renting out that property. What kind of, I suppose, new trends are we seeing on claims, Darren? Like, what are we really seeing now that's different to the past?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head with that one regarding subletting. Definitely seen a lot more of that in the last 6 to 12 months. Quite often, tenants bringing in extra people and helping towards paying the rent. And until it's a problem, that's not really a problem. But more often than not, it's where the landlord doesn't know that the property's been sublet. And more often than not, the letting agent's not aware that the property has been sublet. And that creates all sorts of additional grief in terms of the claims process. But also from the landlord's point of view, his trust in the whole scenario with the agent and with the tenant comes under threat. So it's a very complicated or even more complicated process of having to then liaise with a tenant who doesn't acknowledge that they're in the property, they're not paying the rent. The person who's actually in the property is sometimes unaware that there is another landlord. They think they've done a deal with a person who has got the right to rent the property. So they're distressed about the threat of being evicted as well. So it just adds another layer of complication. And again, it's another unforeseen set of circumstances that a landlord could never plan for. Mm. The other thing we're seeing more and more of is people claiming disrepair of the property. We see some quite funny ones sometimes. We had one recently where somebody stopped paying the rent because the fridge wasn't working. And we also had one recently where they stopped paying the rent because they wanted a new bathroom. And scenarios like that is the mediation service comes into its own, because when a tenant realises that these aren't grounds for not paying the rent, these aren't true disrepair issues, that they do face potential eviction issues if they don't carry on paying the rent. Without those kind of sort of independent conversations, tenants and landlords could fall out. So again, developments we've made in our claims service are really there to sort of make life as easy as possible for the letting agent and their landlord.
Yeah, excellent. I think as well, with landlords selling, we've definitely seen more of a trend of that in the last year, as I think the whole market has, and actually therefore relying on a Section 21 to get possession when the tenant isn't agreeing to move out.
You're quite right. With the increases in interest rates and the increases in the cost of living, and generally just the increase in burden for a landlord in terms of renting a property, we're seeing more and more landlords exiting the industry and selling up. And then Section 21s. So yeah, we've had a rise in number, certainly in the last year, of Section 21 claims. And sometimes tenants have been there for quite a while and struggled to find another property to their liking in the area and just sit. And therefore, it can be quite a lengthy process, just like it could be on any of these claims, to actually get vacant possession of the property and get the tenant to move on.
Yeah. And I think in one way, and I'm not saying I agree with this, but I think tenants that are now paying a higher amount of rent often expect more for it and expect a higher service in return. What changes do you foresee, if any, Darren, with rent and legal protection when rent reform comes in? Because tenants obviously aren't going to be tied to such a long contract period. And therefore, if they're, you know, 8 months into a tenancy, rather than, you know, thinking they've got 4 months rent to pay, in reality, they can give notice at that point and move out with only two. Do you think that that's going to necessarily lower claims, or do you think the same thing's really going to happen? And, you know, tenants that are not moving out genuinely can't afford to move out, and nothing's really going to change at all.
Yes, well, with the rent reforms having been on the agenda for quite some time now, I don't know whether we're looking forward to them coming into effect or not. But what we do see is that the rent reforms will give tenants more rights and not landlords any more rights. So we don't expect claims numbers to decrease, and we certainly don't expect any reduction in how much it's going to cost claims. There's lots of talk of court reform and speeding up processes, and until that's a reality, we're going to see a continuation of things taking over 8 months, potentially beyond 12 months. And nothing in the rent reforms is going to change that. And if anything, with tenants having more rights, you could actually make a good case for there being more claims.
Thank you so much for your time, Darren. I could actually talk about rent and legal protection all day. And my mother and father-in-law will tell you that, in the fact that I preach to them all the time and they have got a policy on every one of their properties. But before you go, our regular listeners of Let's Talk Let's will know that we always end every pod in asking our guests for a funny story or anecdote. So what have you got for us today?
Okay, thank you, Heidi. I'm going to take you back to the dark ages, to when we used to have paper diaries. And I never used to be the most organised of people, so I had a habit of turning up at the wrong place for my meetings. So I'd agree to meet with somebody, assume that they were expecting me to go to their office, and quite often I'd turn up at their place. They weren't there because they are on their way to my office, which when I was working in London was never too much of a problem, because you're only a short walk or tube journey away to meeting up somewhere. But quite a while ago, and ironically because I live in Reading, I'd arranged a meeting with an insurer for a number of my colleagues to come to Reading to pitch to the insurer for a potential new business deal. And I thought I'd had it all organised. It was a short little journey for me. As it turned out, as we were all arriving at their offices in London, we were getting calls from the office in Bristol to say that a party from the insurer had turned up and were ready for the meeting that we'd organised.
Oh,
it was laughable at the time. And eventually we did win the deal. But I must admit, after that day, I never made the same mistake again. And I am grateful now for technology putting things electronically into my life.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a recent story where I was going to see a customer and I got one letter wrong in the postcode. I got there and I was early and I rang Nigel and said, I'm here. And then I was like, hang on, I'm not here at all. And I was way too far away. I was pretty much down near Brighton. I wasn't going to be there at all. So I can definitely relate. And that's recent, so I'm embarrassed to actually admit it. To ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and please leave us a review. Thank you to Darren, and thank you all for listening.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.